I like to think of our awkwardness as data. What are those things that we feel especially awkward about? So some of us, you know, public speaking, that can be certainly a big one. But for others, it can be as simple as saying the wrong thing, or specific people make us feel awkward. Maybe it's a leader or a manager or someone we deem to be higher level, superior, more talented, more graceful, more expert, you know, any number of things. To me, these are such interesting data points, because if we can start to get really curious and peel back the layers, why do we feel awkward in these situations around these people? That's worthy of a deep dive, because what it's telling us is there's a specific type of person or situation that ratchets up that need for approval.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the highlight reel, Builder for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today. That's right, indeed, because we got a treat for you that's good enough to eat two times over, because today's guest is a two-time TEDx speaker, y'all. That's right, indeed. Red Teddy Bear Swag Ahoy, as well as an award-winning, best-selling author of her very first book. And that's a rarity, folks. Folks usually don't knock out both in the first book, but this chick did it, y'all, because not only that, she's also an executive coach, workplace performance expert, and known by her clients as the secret weapon for impossible change. Well, move over to Victoria, because she ain't a secret no more. So let's give it up for the heavenly and powerful Hannah Pryor.
Oh, what an intro. Thank you for having me, Dom. Excited to be here.
Woo-hoo, excited to have you here too, indeed. I saw our email pitch and name of your book. I'm like, oh, shoot, it's going to be interesting, because there's a lot of awkward going on nowadays, especially in a good old post-early 2020 pandemic times where folks lost social cues and whatnot. And even before then, thanks to technology. So I'm like, all right, let's see what this is going to be all about.
Exactly right. I mean, I think that's one thing when we talk about, so the title of the book is Good Awkward, for those who don't know. And you're right. This is something that is not just for introverts. You'll know right out of the bat and talking to me, probably can kind of tell I'm not an introvert. So this is not necessarily a book for introverts. This is a book for everyone who is now in a society where social interaction isn't nearly as required as it used to be. And we all learned the impact of that when we came out of isolation after the pandemic. So it's been a lot of fun to explore.
Thank you. It's like, darn, it's like I got to come out of this igloo here. It's right, dude, I feel isolated. It's like, yeah. Dude, you're in Florida. Where'd you get an igloo from? Oh, well, speaking of igloos, introductions aren't allowed to be 72 days long, and I'm pretty sure you didn't wake up to be the leader of awkward country and making folks ride their Broncos. So my goodness, how'd you get to this point to be the henna that you are today?
Yeah. Oh boy. So it's funny. Lately in the last couple months, people are like, how's it feel to be the awkward expert? And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I woke up wanting that title necessarily, but you know, what got me here? So, you know, for profession, just for sort of you know, kind of background purposes, I am an author, but I'm also a keynote speaker, workshop facilitator, executive coach. Keynote speaking is how I spend most of my days for, you know, corporations, associations, events. And if we think about what is one of the most awkward jobs you can have, it's standing in front of a huge group of people and owning that stage. Public speaking historically considered one of the most awkward activities there is. People are afraid of it. People find it nerve-wracking. They find it very awkward and uncomfortable. So to think that this was the career I would end up in surprises me almost as much as it surprises anyone, because I grew up feeling impossibly awkward all the time. So firstborn child of immigrants, my parents are from India and Pakistan. And I always felt that the me that I wanted to be was clashing with the me that was on display. And every time I hit a transitional point, whether it was going to high school, starting college, starting my first job, starting my new job, trying to go for a promotion, every inflection point, every transition point, that emotion kicked up again. And finally, a couple of years ago, I felt like, you know what? I'm not the only one who feels this. And no one has gotten super curious about this specific emotion at work and in life. And so I got very curious. Thus began the deep dive.
There you go. She even does some underwater photography metaphorically on the topic.
Yes, exactly.
That's right indeed. That's right indeed. And if I'm not mistaken, I guess what came to this was some evil folks in middle school, if I'm not mistaken, because you're a firstborn immigrant daughter.
Yeah, you know, I think like many people in middle school, I was trying to figure out where I fit in. So my daughter is now in middle school. Our daughter is 13. She's in eighth grade. So I'm watching it replay in real time, where in that era of life, it feels like the most important thing is social belonging, right? So for background setting, awkwardness is a social emotion. We can sometimes feel it by ourselves, but usually not. It's something that we tend to feel in front of others. It is a social emotion of discomfort. If I am in my office practicing a presentation and I mispronounce someone's name, but no one is there to hear it, I might catch myself, but I don't typically feel awkward or embarrassed about that. Now I do that same thing in front of a group of colleagues. That's very different. It's a social emotion of discomfort. And so in middle school is where you want everyone's approval. You're desperately trying to fit in socially to the point where you are looking for who you are through the lens of who other people see. So subconsciously, you're asking yourself, do they like who they see? Do they approve of who they see? And we make our decisions based on that. And for me, that started very much in middle school. Again, you know, immigrant parents, my parents, you know, now as an adult, packed me delicious food for lunch, you know, keema paratha instead of peanut butter and jelly, but it was aromatic. Those spices filled up the cafeteria. You know, I wore my hair in long braids when all my friends were allowed to get perms with their bangs hairsprayed up. You know, these were the things that I wanted. My name was Henna, not Jessica or Samantha or Jennifer, like everybody was back then for me. And so again, I felt like that the me I thought I wanted other people to see never quite matched. And I spent a lot of time thinking about that.
As I'm talking about indeed. Well, that's the good thing about life is that when you live long enough, you get to realize I had it a fabulous as is a long time.
Yeah.
Just saying it's unleashing it a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think everybody needs to endure those days to get a sense of self. It's just tough when those days continue into adulthood. And I think that's where there's a lot of opportunity to explore those of us who are still holding on to those same stories.
Yeah. Heck yeah, indeed. Sometimes it feels like an iron grip for some people, but my goodness. So speaking of that, I guess that even goes back to the wonderful definition of awkward in this case. I'm glad you dropped that on folks so that way they have an idea of where you're coming from on the topic, because it's like, hey, how are you gonna feel awkward by yourself? It's like, oh god. Well, then again, if you trip, you'll first look around and see if someone else is around.
Yeah.
Does anybody see that?
It's the awkward check, right? Like, does anybody else think I don't know how to walk, or is it just me? Right? We do that. And so that's actually a great kind of example of what the definition I use in the book around what is awkwardness. So again, it is a social emotion and it is an emotion of discomfort, but in the context of what we're talking about, awkwardness is the emotion that we feel when the person we believe ourselves to be or our true self is momentarily facing a gap between the person other people see on display. In other words, our internal identity for a moment, or maybe moments, doesn't match what we think is their external reality. So in the example, Dom, that you just gave, I'm walking down the street, minding my business, and I trip over this massive crack in the sidewalk. My internal identity in that moment is I'm someone who knows how to walk. The external reality that we worry about is, oh my gosh, this person thinks this is somebody aloof who doesn't pay attention, who doesn't know how to walk, right? Obviously, this ratchets up in higher stakes situations. When anytime we're trying to take a risk at work, I raise my hand in a meeting. I'm like, hey, I have an idea. And somebody says, oh, that's a terrible idea. Or, oh, we already talked about that. All of a sudden, the person I believe myself to be, smart, competent, capable, someone who has good ideas at work, for a moment, there's a gap between the person they see on display, or at least in our minds that they see on display. They don't know what they're talking about. They weren't listening. They don't understand. And in that tension, in that gap, is where we feel the emotion of awkwardness.
Yeah, that's right indeed. That's right indeed. And some folks stay with them forever because no, the shame, no, if it's bad. And if I'm not mistaken, in the book, you have a concept called the awkwardness compass, right?
Yeah, sort of. Not the compass. We've got a couple of different things, but we've got the identity gap, which is those two places. And then the idea that you're referring to, I believe, is just this idea of using our awkwardness as a signal, right? The directionality of it. And so I like to think of our awkwardness as data. What are those things that we feel especially awkward about? So some of us, you know, public speaking, that can be certainly a big one. But for others, it can be as simple as saying the wrong thing, or specific people make us feel awkward. Maybe it's a leader or a manager or someone we deem to be higher level, superior, more talented, more graceful, more expert, you know, any number of things. To me, these are such interesting data points, because if we can start to get really curious and peel back the layers, why do we feel awkward in these situations around these people? That's worthy of a deep dive, because what it's telling us is there's a specific type of person or situation that ratchets up that need for approval, that need for social approval. And where does that come from? What is it rooted in? Because the truth is, unless we examine those stories, we cannot eliminate awkwardness, because to eliminate awkwardness implies we have to eliminate uncertainty in life, and that's never going to happen. So better that we understand its origin, where does it come from, and start to formulate a plan for how to embrace it and lean into it when it inevitably comes, which it will.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, because I was thinking like, wait a second, that does make a lot of sense when you put it that way, indeed, because really, what's the saying? I guess failure's feedback. It's not really failure, but it's like a moment of, oh, this is some feedback here. It's like, oh, awkwardness is feedback. This is going to help you advance as you use this situation in the future and act differently.
Yeah, exactly. I the phrase I like to use in the phrase I use in the book is looking for the gifts in the garbage, right? How can we look for the gift in the garbage? Awkwardness doesn't feel good. It's uncomfortable. But there's a gift in every one of those moments. And usually we just want it to go away as quickly as possible. But if you stay with it or think about it a little bit longer, there's enormous growth potential inside of that emotion. Most of us just run away from it too fast in order to get that data.
You can say that again. You could definitely say that again. So my goodness, since the show is also mostly about inspiring folks to join the business of immortality and write their books, what helped you to finally get the confidence to put this together after doing all these years of research and selecting a wonderful topic that folks wouldn't even consider?
Yeah, I mean, I think like many that, you know, listen to your show, I've had interest in the book process for a really long time. I think since the fifth grade, I wanted to write a book. And I think like many, there was, you know, the awkwardness or the imposter thoughts of what do I have to say that's unique, that's different, that's worthy of putting a book out there. But one of the things that I knew to be true from other author friends is whatever the book does or not, you change and transform and learn as a human through the process of writing and researching a book. And so I took the pressure off of myself about how is this going to sell or how is it going to do in the market? And instead was like, you know, this is something I've always wanted to do. I've wanted to improve my writing. I'm just going to start the process of writing, researching, editing, and see where it goes. And of course, with anything, momentum begets momentum. You just start going and it's much easier to keep going. But, you know, one of the quotes that I share in the book that my good friend Colin Henderson told me is most people don't even do the start. You know, it begins before it begins. It's the start that stops most people. It's the start that stops most people. So if you're thinking about writing a book and you're just in your head about what's it going to feel like, is it going to be a lot? It is a lot. And guess what? You don't have to do it in one sitting. You don't have to do it in one sitting. You don't have to do it on anybody's timeline. Just start. And remember that it's the start that stops most people. If you can start, you're ahead of 90% of authors who have an idea and never do a damn thing with it. Just start.
Yeah, preach it, because it's true. It's so true. It's like, yeah, let me think about making world peace happen all in one sitting of writing right. In my mind. Yeah. It's like, did you even open up a Word document or a Google Doc or at least put out a notebook? Like, no, but I'm thinking about it. Exactly. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I have a friend who says, you know, ideas or just strategy without execution is hallucination. You might have the best idea for a book. Many people do, but there's a reason most authors don't write books, because the execution part is the hard part. I don't care if you write bad, just write. Just write, because you're already ahead of 90% of the people who have a great idea.
That's true. Don't want to be sitting around hallucinating all day.
Exactly.
Or hallucinating for years.
Exactly. Like, oh,
God, I've been tripping for years. And I'm making it awkward because I'm telling people I'm going to do it, but I ain't even started.
Yeah, exactly.
So any roadblocks on the middle of the way to finally getting that publish button pressed that you had to deal with?
Oh, yeah. I started writing the book. I think I had like a lot of words written. They were a bit of a jumble, but like 40 to 50,000 words written, not necessarily in final form. And then again, this is a wonderful problem. I'm not complaining, but I landed 2 TEDx talks within 90 days. So I did one in September of last year, one in December. And TEDx talks for people who are professional speakers like myself, you know, I did not want to do a poor job of it. I needed to make sure that I really did a good job. And so the book went on the literal and proverbial shelf for 6 months. So I had all this momentum and then I didn't touch the damn thing for 6 months. And so after the TEDx's were done, I was like, okay, I got to pick this book thing back up. But at that point it had gathered dust for 6 months. And so I was frozen. I don't know what to do. I didn't know if any of these words were any good anymore. I didn't even know if this is where I wanted the book to go, right? So I was like, I don't even know what to do with this. But I didn't try to fight that feeling alone. I reached out to a bunch of other speaker author friends and said, hey, I've got a bunch of words written. I'm stuck. Do you have any suggestions? And a few of them gave me some great advice. One of my kind of mentors said, this might be a good opportunity for you to work with a book coach for a little bit. Somebody who can look at what you've got already, help you extract your ideas again, get you sort of clear again on the story that you want to tell. So I did. I hired a book coach and she was exactly what I needed at the time to get me unstuck. I was stuck. I was in the mud then and I don't think I could have pulled myself out. She was able to take where I was and kind of refresh it, like fluff the pillow again. What are we doing here? Where are we going with this? And it was exactly what I needed. But there were 6 months there where I didn't do anything. So I was wondering if I was going to be able to pick it back up at all.
Yeah. Hey, it comes with the wonderful territory and days. Like, hey, you got to rock these videos here because they're going to be mm-hmm. for a freaking lifetime. And it's going to be kind of a part of the whole calling card package here. And it's like, book. Yeah, that's exactly. Good too, but that can wait. I'll let that be on a shelf. It'll be shelf help.
Yeah, exactly.
Woohoo! Well, congratulations on its fabulous release and successful release. So any thoughts on a possible second book in the future?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I it was a lot, right? Like getting the book out and written and published and launched and marketing, it was a lot. And I needed the holidays for sure to take a deep breath and relax, but I already know I'll do another one. And that's how my friends who have done this are like, you're a true author when you're like, oh, it was exhausting and I can't wait to do it again. Right. So For sure, there'll be a second one. A couple ideas I'm tossing around for the content. It's not going to be awkward 2.0, right? I think the good awkward movement is still fresh and picking up steam. It's the book. I'm just so proud. It just was named one of the best books of 2023 by Kirkus Reviews. It was a finalist in the American Book Fest Awards. It's selling extremely well, referral, all word of mouth. People are telling their friends about it, gifting it. And so all of that is still happening. And I want to focus on that energy and let it keep, you know, getting its word of mouth. But you know, the next book is in there. I've got a couple ideas I'm tossing around, but I think I want to give this one its fair attention before I go into number two.
Ah, there you go. It's right indeed. It's right indeed, because I got some good steam. That's right. Mm-hmm. Got a big old locomotive train. That's right indeed. A giant tea kettle. That's right mm-hmm. indeed. There's plenty of tea left in the kettle.
Yeah, I think so.
So my goodness, it's such a bit on so many wonderful interviews promoting the good work that you're doing. Is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
Oh, you know what? I feel like I've been asked almost everything, but the one that actually feels present for me this morning because of, you know, you and I are recording this. I don't know when it's going to release, but at the time of the new year, you know, we just crossed into 2024. And I think the thing that feels present to me is this idea of intention, right? My theme of the year is intention. And so I'm thinking about this intersection of, as authors or as people who want to put ideas into the world, it's easy to get distracted and shiny object syndrome and, you know, what's next, what's fun, what's exciting. But I'm really thinking about what are my intentions for this work and this book and this movement for 2024. And to me, it kind of piggybacks on what we just talked about, which is a lot of people have really jumped onto this idea, but there's still a world of people who don't know me, don't know the content yet. And so I think my intention is to continue to, as you said, like drive and ride the locomotive until more people have access to it and not get distracted too quickly by the shiny objects of the next thing. And so that to me is, you know, I think where my theme of the year and the work intersect.
Yeah, there you go. Good old intention. That's right. Mm-hmm. They gotta have the good old intention with the action to match. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. That's right indeed. Especially when the world will find out. So that way it'd be like, yeah, it's too late, y'all. You're now part of the train, y'all. The awkward train.
Jump it's on awkward the awkward country. Train. That's right.
That's right. Jump on too. Don't worry. You don't need bunny ears to ride this train.
That's right. That's right.
It may make it awkward for some people.
Exactly. Always does.
That's right indeed. Awkward country is on the ride. Mm-hmm. Oh man, well, fun question for you. If you're wonderful, fabulous book. Actually, before that one, since you're an entrepreneur and you've been doing a whole bunch of wonderful things, there's probably been some setbacks along the journey. So what'd you consider your biggest setback that actually set you up for success?
Oh gosh, how much time you got? I think, you know, part of the movement of this book is embracing those cringe moments, those awkward moments. I mean, I think many of them, you know, the idea of the book, I first pitched to a literary agent for a big publishing house who promptly turned it down and said, you know, it wasn't sellable enough. And it's, again, fun to be like, well, that's awkward. That rejection felt awkward, but here you go. Like, this is more fuel. This is more of a story. So that was certainly one. I mean, again, I think many times I've had missteps and rejections and turn downs. I remember one of my first stories in the book is when I came back, kind of back to meeting clients after the pandemic, I totally messed up. I was telling a story to a client and he put his hand up and I thought he was telling me I was crushing it. And so I high-fived him and he literally said, "Henna, I was telling you to stop."
Ouch.
And I was like, oh my God, right? Like, you dummy. Now, is that a setback? Is that an embarrassing moment? Of course, that didn't feel good. It felt terrible in the moment. I'm like, God, Henna, you idiot. And it's also people's favorite story in the book, right? So I try to remind myself every setback, every misstep, every failure, and God, there are many, even though we don't feel the gifts in the garbage in that moment, there is one of two things in that. There's either a gift, which there often is, or at a minimum, there's a story that I promise you will laugh about later if not the next day, right? But there is always one of those two things. We just have to have the faith that we will see those at some point.
Yeah, that's right. At some point, indeed. That's right, indeed. Whether you're pointing at yourself in the mirror or pointing north, that's right, indeed. Or pointing at a random sign hanging in the rafters of an arena, that's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. The magical point, indeed. Well, fun question for you. So, your fabulous book, Good Awkward, How to Embrace the Embarrassing and Celebrate the Cringe to Become the Bravest You. If that book were a food, what would it be and why?
No, that's a great question. If that book was a food, what would it be? I mean, something that's awkward, probably like a real messy buffalo wing or something where it's like, you're making a mess of your hands and your mouth and it's like getting on your shirt, right? Like food that's incredibly ungraceful, I think is what it would be. So I'm going to go with a real messy, drippy buffalo wing.
First time I think we've gotten buffalo wings for someone's book. It makes sense. It makes perfect sense. Oh, man. Well, coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive. And that is, if you don't wake up tomorrow and you were 25 again, but you're still in the current year, what advice would you give to yourself?
My favorite advice to give anyone who is currently 25, and it applies as much today, and this would be advice to me too, is place small bets. Place small bets. It's not all or nothing all the time. Just try things in little doses. So if you're thinking about writing a book, write one chapter, write a couple pages and just see how it feels. If you're thinking about keynote speaking, speak for free at your church or at a local nonprofit or something. Just try it a little bit. Again, it's that start that stops most people. So if you can start by just doing something small, placing a tiny bet, if it works and it feels good, guess what? Double down. And if it doesn't, nobody was paying that much attention to you to begin with. And so place small bets. Don't be so afraid of whether something's going to work or not. Just start small and try.
That's what I'm talking about, indeed. Rare advice, too, because all folks are talking about thinking big. It's like, yeah. But hey, place small bets, though. It's like you don't go to a casino and then put it all on the line your first play.
No, because then you'll never do it again. You know, we gotta downward adjust.
Yeah, exactly. It makes so much sense indeed. It's the DA you need, the downward adjustment.
Exactly.
Oh man. So before folks think about another type of DA, folks need to think about following you and all the stuff that you do, because the good news is you're just getting started. So for those need to keep up and join the Henna Awkward Party of Success, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Oh, LinkedIn and Instagram are my two favorite. LinkedIn probably the most, but I'm just Henna Pryor at both places. Henna Pryor on Instagram, and always happy to make new connections and new friends. So definitely link up.
There you have it, folks. That's right, indeed. Follow her on the LI and the IG. Y'all, that's right, indeed. Keep up with and on all her fabulous content. Be sure to cop some copies of her magical book, y'all. That's right, indeed. Share it with your friends, family, cat, especially a Bronco, if you got a pet Bronco for a reason. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed, y'all. So, by goodness, any parting words before we close up shop, Henna?
Oh, just a reminder to everyone listening today, if there's something that you're thinking about and you're nervous, you're feeling, you know, a fear that it could be embarrassing, my mantra for this year and every year is do it awkward, but do it anyway.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in. And if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.